Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. I'm going to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Rick and I are just texting as we're speaking, and I sent him the video of my first hit and my quad pull.
I love it.
Ricky, how many times that happened at a fantasy camp in your eyes?
Let's see, I've been to 20 camps at least 30 times, and for sure, once a camp. Sometimes when one guy does it, everybody else gets scared and they don't, but not always. I mean, sometimes it's a hamstring, sometimes it could be a lot of things, but a calf muscle. But, you know, what happens is, and Dave, you can clearly attest to it,
yeah,
you hit the ball and you think you're 20,
yes,
and those first few steps, you're just a little bit out over your skis and not quite as fast as you used to be. Your mind says you are.
Oh, yeah.
Your body says no.
No. In my mind, I knew that every player on the field was impressed with me. And and then I get back to the dugout, and Buck had taken a video, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, you know, I think everybody has that experience in something. My experience in that is golf. When somebody takes a picture of me in my golf swing, I think, oh my goodness, I'm terrible. I mean, I think I'm a little bit between Fred Couples and Phil Mickelson and very smooth.
That's great.
Like, No, I'm not.
How did you feel when you were playing in the pros, Rick? Would you see video of yourself and go, yeah, pretty damn good?
Well, I was always looking at results. I kind of didn't notice my mechanics very much. I was one of those guys that they would try to teach me using video, and they'd say, see where your arm is in your body, and I would say, nope. I couldn't tell. I mean, I just couldn't. I was always thinking about kind of the stuff going on around the target, and I just couldn't. I could not get that kind of. A lot of players can, and it's actually good if you can. But I was not really good at that.
But you could get it on feel.
Yeah, I was a feel guy. I was 100% feel guy. In fact, you know, I tried. You know, Hub Kittle used to tell us in the minor leagues, you should always have a baseball in your hand, and so I would always have a baseball, like on the bus, you know, kind of in my apartment, wherever I was, and just always kind of getting a feel for the seams and how it felt at my fingertips. And that was kind of my thing.
So Mark Bulger is one of my best friends, and he's 46, 47, and he says he feels 70. How's your body after all those years in the bigs?
I actually feel pretty good, honestly. I mean, being a pitcher is a little bit different. Nobody came and tried to sack me. You know, I mean, that just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So I never got hit by a guy that weighed 300 pounds. And so, I mean, it's just a very different kind of thing. Now, I think some of my teammates had more wear and tear because they were playing on the AstroTurf as fielders. So they're sliding, they're diving for balls. I'm just trying not to get hit by a line drive. I mean, I did not have kind of the physical thing in that way. You know, you have a lot of guys have arm surgeries. I did. I had a couple, but nothing, you know, that I didn't overcome. So I actually feel I'm pretty fortunate. I feel pretty good.
Rick, when you had those arm surgeries, I always think about that. Like, you're an elite athlete. You're at the top of your game. Then you need like a Tommy John. Are you just freaked out that you're going to come back and not be able to throw?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it kind of happened, actually. And I actually had the surgeon that did my elbow surgery was Dr. Job, who invented Tommy John. Oh. I mean, he didn't invent the person Tommy John, who I also, by the way, had the chance to connect with during my career. But he was the one that kind of invented that surgery. That's not the one he did on me. But when I came to after my surgery, he said, your arm's never going to be straight again. I tried to straighten it. You don't want to know how. But you have no cartilage in your elbow. Sorry, that's the way it is. And so I kind of got some bad news, actually, after my surgery. And then I kind of lost that little extra I had, and my career went went in the wrong direction after that.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah. I know. You'll see it. I think it's a little better now, Rick. But even now, some guys, you can still see that little crook in the elbow. Because I know our pitching coach in college had that very same thing. It's just that right elbow, his right, obviously your left, was just a little bit bent all the time.
Yep. When I do a jumping jack, my left hand hits myself in the head. I mean, I just can't. It's too crooked. I can't straighten it out. And it is. I'm going to say it's not like 2 degrees. It's probably, I'm going to say, 10 to 15 degrees crooked. So, and you don't notice it, again, unless you're trying to swing a golf club, and then it's, and they tell you to keep your arm straight, and you say, well, I would if I could.
That's a good point.
So, let's talk about the Cardinals a little bit. I have a weird thing to say. I know that Sonny Gray is our ace, and I love Sonny, but I'm most comfortable when McGreevy's pitching these days. And I know he's a rookie, and I know he's barely has a record yet, but I really like this kid.
I don't think you're far off on that. I really don't. I mean, I think, you know, Sonny, you know, I'm going to say 7 times out of 10, he's awesome. I mean, he's nasty. He's got this stuff. And then there's other times he doesn't. But McGreevy so far has been consistently, maybe not the wow factor of Sonny Gray. He's not going to strike out 8, 9, 10 guys. But he's a pitch maker, and he competes too. What I like most about Michael McGreevy is, you know, he made an error the other day, and the next ball was hit to him, and he had a similar play, and he didn't make an error, and he was smiling on the mound. He was relaxed. He's so comfortable in his own skin, and you know that's a great lesson for an athlete to kind of, you know, you got to act like you belong there, and you know you can't be scared, you can't be confused. He's very comfortable in his own skin.
If I could give a gift to a young athlete, that would be the gift I would give them, to have the ability to right size and the ability to see humor in almost anything.
Yeah, one of the things I did when I was a pitching coach, I actually did this. I was with the Cleveland Indians at the time, then Guardians. And when I gave pitching lessons and coached some of my son's teams, one of my favorite things to tell the pitchers, but you know, you're going to hear a lot of pitching advice. This is the most important advice. When you throw a pitch, whatever happens, act like that's exactly what you wanted to do. And I think that's the mindset of, okay, I'm in charge here, and I'm not going to kind of look negative down. I'm not going to see. My grandmother always used to tell me, I never want to see the top of your head when you walk off the mound. I always want to see your face. I don't care how bad you pitch. My grandmother taught me that. Always kind of face up to wherever you know you find yourself. And I think that's good advice for a young player, because you can. It's so easy to think negatively. You know, it's a game of errors and mistakes and human, you know, fragility, and you got to kind of get past that.
It's interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, that's true for every position. You know, I've always hammered all my young catchers on that. Like, you cannot show anybody that anything's wrong, because what you look like impacts the people around you, right? So, you know, I don't know if you've had many of those examples, but I'm sure that there are times where you've seen it, at least, where bad body language kind of, you know, other people feed off of it, or they react to it, if not feed off of it. And same for good body language.
Yeah. What happens is your teammates get drugged down with you. That's what happens.
Yeah.
If you're acting that way, especially if you're a pitcher and you're kind of in charge of the game and your pitcher acts like he doesn't know what he's doing, oh my goodness, the guys behind you are really going to be. Or if you're the star player and you kind of check out, that's not good either. But on the other side, not only do your teammates get dragged down if you're dragged down, but the other team gets lifted up, because it's like sharks in the water, blood in the water for sharks. I mean, they're going to feed on you. They're going to feed on that negativity and start pressing you, and then things get worse.
So when you're looking at you know, Andre Pallante, Ricky, we saw him again last night, and he's been struggling to try to find it. You know, he's an interesting guy, because the stuff is good. He gets good ground. He's one of the best ground ball rates in baseball. His walk rate's about average, so it's not crazy. But is it just better command within the zone than what it is? Because control is one thing, command is another. And maybe you could describe that difference for our listeners. But there are a couple of pitches where, like, the four-seamer tends to be way too much in the middle of the plate when you look at, like, the graph of all of them thrown this year. And then the knuckle curve seems to be way too much out of the zone down, I mean, by a lot. Is it just that precise command that can take his ability and make him more consistent?
Yeah, I think control, simply said, is, I mean, is can you throw strikes? But if you hang a curveball, it might be a strike, but it's not,
right.
You're not commanding it. You're not putting it where you want it to go. So it's the where you want it to go, when you want it to go, and consistently making it go there. And so there's an add subtract element, like changing speeds on your pitches. There's a changing eye level, going up, then down, then in, then out. And all those things are kind of, they're not kind of learned as well in today's game because everybody's looking, chasing spin and velocity. But those things still play. And if you're kind of a middle of the road stuff guy, you better have command. That's the word we want. And,
right.
And that's, you know, basically that's pitching. And then you make a mistake. Don't compound it by making another one. Adjust quickly. And I think that's what Andre's been having some trouble doing, is adjusting quickly enough so there's only one run on the board instead of three.
It's tough. And, you know, he's in that age group. You know, this is only his second year as a big league starter. So he's in that age group where you can still learn things the rest of the way. Because last year when he started, he was really good. And this year early was pretty good. But the last couple of months, 2-3 months, have been that fight that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I feel like it was August the year before when he was up for a little bit. He was the Cardinals' best pitcher. I mean, and as a starter, he can do it. There's no doubt he can do it. He's got the ability to do it. But, you know, it kind of has to, you know, be, again, consistent. And, you know, it's not unusual for a pitcher to lose it for a while and then kind of rediscover and relearn things that you once knew. I always think that about being an athlete, too, is you're not always learning something for the first time. You're relearning it. And you're like, oh, my goodness, yes, I forgot about that. And so I think it's, you know, I think it may be that kind of discovery and that kind of journey that he's on right now.
I'll say this, though, Ricky. Even with the guys they traded, man, the bullpen's turning in some good work.
Yeah.
Oh, they're great. How about Swanson?
He's
fun to watch. And he's got that factor, that it factor, that you know, not that he's a tough guy. I don't mean that. But you kind of have to have a little bit of rusty nail in you. I've always thought that. I mean, I tried to muster that up the best I could for a, you know, for an Opie Taylor type guy, you know, Ron Howard type, Richie Cunningham person. You know, I mean, you gotta compete. You still got to be in charge. You still have to let somebody know you mean business. And you know, I think Swanson has that in a quiet way. And again, I just like that at the end of the game when you got a guy that has that firm kind of demeanor on the mound.
Rick, who is the rustiest nail you played with?
Oh my goodness, did I play with some rusty nails? You know,
how do you pick?
I mean, they were rusty in different ways. I mean, Joaquin Andujar was rusty because he was combustible. Maybe a better word for him.
Yeah.
You know, Ozzy was a bit of a rusty nail as a player. He was very focused, firm. You know, Ozzy was not into pleasantries when he competed as a teammate. He just didn't, and I admire that about him. I mean, he absolutely competed. And he kind of had that stern look on his face. Tommy Herr was like that. Tommy Herr was very, you know, kind of rusty in that way. And Danny Cox was, in terms of competing against the other team, you know, everybody knew you don't mess with Danny, and he liked it that way.
It's fun.
Yeah, really fun.
I mean, every team's got that, you know, and look, it may be a little easier sometimes when you're, you know, Danny Cox, you literally look like you could beat everybody's ass when you're out there, or when you're, you know, Swanson and you're 6'5 and you throw 97.
Right.
It's a little bit different of a feel.
And one other guy, Bob Forsch, was like that too.
Really?
And I just thought of Bob today. I did a nostalgia walk here in St. Pete, walking for a 4-mile walk today, just going to places I used to go to, and the Al Lang Stadium. The Cardinals trained here for years with the Mets, and it just kind of a really a nice, fun nostalgia walk. I went by a field where I saw the longest home run I ever saw hit into a lake by Daryl Strawberry off of Bob Forsch. And it's like legendary. It's like, did that really happen? Did he really hit the ball into the lake over the trees? And so I went and visited the lake today, and I didn't find the ball, but I had a good memory.
That's awesome. All right, buddy. Have a great game.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's DGS on KMOX. On the break, we're just talking about Rach's niece, Blair, just started kindergarten. And I remember it so well. And I think it's so interesting how kids do in kindergarten. And I was younger. I was like a year younger than everyone else and tiny. But I was such a rule follower. And so I was just obsessed. Like the other kids are like, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. They're just like running around and grab assing. And yeah. I was just like, look, this is nap time.
That's Jack and Francis right there.
That's right.
So, yeah. Follow the rules.
So were you the actual youngest in your class, just based on where your birthday
is? I think there was one girl who was younger than me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I was usually one of the oldest.
Yeah. Well, being September 6th, I was right on the edge.
Yeah, you could have went the next year.
Could have gone
probably.
The next year.
Right.
Yeah. And I really wish I had. Like, I loved all my friends, and it was great, but this is just pure selfishness. But my year, 1982, was the best sports class we'd ever had. And we were known for sports. And so I would have been much more of a standout the year after. And so just one of those woulda, shoulda, coulda things. I could have gone to state, you know, that kind of thing.
I can throw a football clear over that mountain.
But I also, like, I have a lot of my teacher friends will say that the biggest favor you can do for your child is send them a year later, if that's in the possibilities.
It's an interesting question, because I'm that was me. I went to kindergarten a year later than I could have. I could have started the year before. And my parents' philosophy was he might be better off if he's one of the older kids in the class rather than one of the youngest kids in the class. But then there's another part to that, though. If you're talking about the sports angle, sometimes it's better to be the younger one.
How so?
Well, I mean, if you're a 19-year-old at some point, you're going to be in a position where people think you're better because you're just older than everybody, as opposed to being on the younger side and still being good and getting started on your college career younger or your pro career younger, which is how some people think. I wouldn't think that way. I would let your kids' educational development be the first thing, because you don't know the athletic part until they're much older.
Yeah.
So you can't make that decision in kindergarten based on that.
It's interesting. I was just thinking when Wheels was talking about, you know, like starting late and... Well, you were your parents' first baby.
Yep.
So
yep.
You're the only one of the four of us who's the firstborn. The rest of us are the babies.
Maybe that's why I am the way I am.
Well, I was thinking, like, you do have, like, of the four of us, like, Wheels is the outlier personality type. Like, not that the three of us are, like, exactly the same or anything, but you have the, like, Wheeler traits.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's, like, a birth order thing. Do you guys pay any attention to that?
I know a lot of people put very solid stock in that. In the birth order stuff, much more than like...
Yeah,
you know.
I don't view it in like a paranormal way. Like,
No, it's just more of like... Well, for example, I mean, till my brother was born, so I was almost three.
Yeah.
I got all the attention. I got, you know, the world was me.
Yeah.
As a 1 and 2 year old kid, almost three.
I had that because both my brother and sister were out of the house by the time I was four.
Okay.
But my parents had me late in life, especially the 1960s. And they were still very much like it was about the rules. So it wasn't one of those where like I got to do anything I want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But and I don't mean this meanly towards my mom and dad. I think a lot of baby kids from the 60s and 70s, you kind of got ignored where it was just like, hey, we're tired. We've already raised two of you. And you're kind of on your own.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time just like, you know, doing stuff on my own.
Yeah. I think that would be similar to, a little bit different, but similar to how it was for my sister. You know, she's born when I was 18. My brother was 15. So she was really the only child in the house. Because by the time my brother's 16 driving when she's, 8 months old, like the boys, we were no longer kind of the day-to-day responsibility. Mm-hmm. So in that case, the youngest actually wound up getting all the attention. Because that's all that was necessary. You know, the boys were already kind of grown.
Also,
so it's almost like being that firstborn.
Having done it as well, Nick and Phoebe are 10 years apart. And when I had Nick, I didn't have a pot to you know what in. And that's why we're best friends and we're like foxhole, you know, companions, because we went through it when he was young and I was broke. But when Phoebe came along, it was much better. And it was my time to go like, okay, all those mistakes I made with Nick, I'm not making any of those with Phoebe. And then I made all those with Phoebe. So.
If we'd carried it out to sea, pushed it over the edge, we'd have all been through. Well, first off, Garrick.
Is that a clever intro or is something wrong?
I picked the wrong song.
Okay.
I apologize.
No problem. I just didn't know if I was going crazy. Didn't know what the kids were listening to these days.
This is about a 30-year-old album.
Yeah, I think 1991.
Those are kids.
Yeah, these kids.
So, Andrew, you would like to be roommates with the Pope?
I think I could deal with it. He's looking for roommates.
I love it.
He's a man of the people. A Pope of the people.
Pope Leo.
A Pope of the people.
Just chilling in the hammock and both of you taking walks shirtless.
Yeah. He wants to room with, like, the Cardinals and stuff. I think it's cool, too.
Wants to be around people.
He just seems like it's so weird to have a normal guy Pope.
Yeah, and I'm not very calm.
I do not mean to disrespect any previous Pope, any prior Pope. But they all seem like freaks, right? They all seemed like the Pope.
No disrespect, but you guys are freaks.
No, they all seemed like the Pope. They all seemed like these untouchable beings of higher power instead of just like a dude. And with all the, you know, this guy's signing Pokemon cards and he's, you know, he's going to baseball games and he's like, yeah, I think I'm gonna bunk with my pals.
I honestly think it's just because he's American and he's like us.
That's what I was gonna say too. Like we just immediately connect on that. Like when I found out the Pope was American, I was so proud.
Yeah.
And I'm not Catholic. I did not like care about who the Pope was gonna be at all. And then they're like, and he's from the United States, and I'm going, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like a Chicago Pope. I've been to Chicago a bunch of times. I spent a ton of time in Chicago.
In all honesty, I feel like in all leadership, I prefer someone who's one of us, whether it's an elected official, a Pope, a CEO, an immediate supervisor, whatever. It always feels better.
You guys are totally right, though. The reason that I feel like this is because for the first time ever, we can relate to the Pope.
Yeah.
Well, like we can culturally identify with the Pope.
Or at least with the things that, you know, we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like his day-to-day life, I think we'd all be like, ooh, that's not me. But like just human nature of like being a sports fan.
We came from the same place.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know if you saw this story a couple weeks ago. Someone had his favorite pizza from Chicago delivered to Vatican City.
That's so cool.
I know.
I wonder if he could eat it or if they're afraid of someone poisoning him.
It's a good question. I mean, I would guess that somebody tests it or something along those
lines.
That's
a crap job.
Yeah, I know. Who's the taster for the Pope? I actually probably think, now that I'm thinking about this, the Popes from those other countries probably had the same vibe in those countries.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's like us. He likes whatever wine we like. He likes the soccer teams that we like, whatever.
Yeah. I'm sure they were like, finally, an Italian Pope.
What a Pope's day is like.
Isn't it whatever he wants it to be?
I thought that too when he said that. Like, what do you think the Pope gets up to? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, who is giving the Pope his daily schedule?
Who books the Pope?
Yeah.
I know that he does a lot of, like, he ministers, right? He, like, sees the sick, and I think he does at least one service, like, worship service a day, if not, they don't call it the other Catholic, but he does at least one mass a day, if not, like, multiple. So that's got to take up a solid, you know, 4 or 5 hours right there.
So you guys want some, like, what a day in the life of the Pope can look like?
Nah, sure. I just want to speculate.
Just found a story. Yeah, it's interesting. So on the day that this was tracked, like the day that apparently this person was, I don't know if they were embedded or they talked to someone or but the day started.
I'm embedded with the Pope.
Started at 4:30 in the morning.
I'm in the trenches with the Pope.
He is an early riser, always up before 5 a.m.
This is Leo?
This is the current Pope. Let's see. Oh, no, sorry, wrong. I did the wrong one.
What Pope is that?
Oh, wait, no, I think this is the right guy. Yeah, this is the right guy. Up at 4:30, breakfast, things like that. Mass at 7. Breakfast after Mass at 8 o'clock. Never dined alone, always with other people. Most of the morning working from his office at the in the residence.
So TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
TikTok, yeah.
Set his own agenda for the day. Had lunch at 1 o'clock.
Ooh, late lunch.
Post-lunch nap, like hey, that. Sweet. I'm down with that.
Wow. Pope gets a nap.
Yeah, I don't think this is the current Pope. I think this is the old Pope.
The napping Pope.
But either way.
The Pope's TikTok algorithm's got to be
It's probably
kind
of be whatever the Pope wants it to be, right? Like,
yeah,
you're going to say Mass. You're probably going to meet with dignitaries and people. And you're going to have meetings and eat and sleep.
A lot like our day.
I think, I don't know. I don't think that day is nearly as exciting as our day. I don't want to be in meetings.
Andrew, you and Megan have a new competitive venture?
Yeah. We are Pokemon VGC, which stands for Video Game Competitive. So it's the actual games that we're playing, and we're doing it competitively now.
Which one?
And what does that mean?
Well, it means that you build your little team of guys using the game, just like you would play the games normally.
Is it like a phone game? Is it a Switch game?
Yeah, it's on Switch. It uses so the competitive circuit uses whatever the most recent game is. In this case, it's the Scarlet and Violet versions from the Nintendo Switch in 2023, maybe 22. It's been very fun. I couldn't figure out why I was doing so well at it, and then I realized it's because I've been doing this for like 30 years at this point. So I just have, like, the ability to do it ingrained in me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dang, maybe I finally found the thing that I'm good at. Yeah, maybe I finally found the thing I'm good at. Just playing these stupid games for 30 years.
When do they start paying you?
Well, so the regionals, I think, have like a 15K payout if you win those.
All
and
right.
Then it descends a little bit. But I'd like to go to the World Championships. That sounds super fun.
Can you do that from your home?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, all of that. So regionals, you'd have to like travel. Remember when I went to Peoria and stayed in the lady's
house while she was there? Yeah,
mm-hmm. while she was haunting the room, and her cats were hated me. That was to go to a regionals for the card game. But now I would be doing.
So have you given up the card game?
I gave up the Pokemon card game a long time ago.
No, I mean
the Magic.
Magic.
No, not at all. Not in the slightest.
You're a multi-sport athlete.
I'm a multi-sport athlete. I am
gonna get you an NIL deal.
Yeah, I am like Pat Mahomes. I can do baseball, and I can do football and basketball and Pokemon.
I can't be more like Pat Mahomes' brother.
Yeah, yeah, because I can't do any of those things. Yeah. I can just play Pokemon on the internet. It's fun, though. I recommend it to everybody. It's super fun. Just do it from your house.
Rach, I had a story here that dovetails into one of your Google Doc segments. I read an article yesterday about how we have a crisis of rudeness. And you were talking about how important etiquette is.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the nice etiquette segment we did a couple weeks ago. And, you know, that's nice on a level to where it's just good for kids to learn etiquette so they're a more rounded person. But our society overall, etiquette is so important when it comes to just like getting along with each other, meshing with each other. We talk about going to the movies. If more people understood, like, hey, we're all working towards this common goal and acting somewhat the same way, we have an agreed upon standard for how we're supposed to be behaving here, it'd be so much more of a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
Than like going and people are talking through it and getting up and doing all sorts of different things. I don't know. It's just, I feel like there are just certain things. We're so concerned with like progressing forward and pushing forward and like, oh, that doesn't serve me anymore. We've got to do this a new way. But there are other things where it's like, nah. I mean, the reason why our society has been able to get to the point it is now is because we worked together and we had certain standards.
It's a good point. We sort of have a view overall that if it's old, it's bad. Mm. If people did this 50, 100 years ago, we should be doing something different. And in many cases, that's not true. Especially when it comes to interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, I think we've touched on this thing I'm about to say at some point, but you don't get to just decide things like I'm not doing this thing in society anymore. You can change things. You can get yourself in position to say this is stupid. I don't like this. Let's change it. But you don't just get to decide I'm not participating. Right? I'm not, like the sovereign citizens. You don't get to just say I'm not doing that. No, if you use the roads and you use the garbage, you do those things. No, you're a part of it. You're in it. You don't get to just decide that. And you don't just get to decide new patterns of behavior because you don't like the old ones. If you want to change things over time, go ahead, work to change. That's how it works. That's how society changes. But you don't just get to say, I don't like it, therefore everybody else is wrong and I'm right. You know, I'll just be rude because that's easiest. It's stupid to just be polite. Well, no, then you're just going to get treated like crap by people. You're choosing to be treated like crap so you don't get to complain about it when you're rude to everybody else and they just return that back at you.
Well, I mean, the reason I got to thinking about this is because of the whole, like, Gen Z stare thing and some of the very recent and real customer service I have come across. Just, you know, patronizing different businesses in the St. Louis area. It's so discouraging that it's like, well, this is just the way things are now. It's like, well, guys, I guess we just don't get to have anything nice anymore. Because you have to act a certain way for things to be nice. Mm-hmm. If you want people to meet, it's exactly what Wheels just said. If you want a good experience, you got to put a good experience out there.
You get
and
what you
act
give,
like
man.
It's, to act like something as simple as like customer service or just doing your job is like silly and beneath you. And like everyone who did that in the past is just a chump. It's like, no, we get to have what we have now because of many, many years of people kind of crafting this method, and now we're throwing that method away, and it's just we're gonna lose out on a lot of really nice things.
And I know it's the opposite of empiric, but it seems almost empirical to me, just objectively true, that when dealing with customer service, it is superior to be nice to the customer and engaged as opposed to staring at them.
Yeah.
I don't know how you argue that.
And the other thing I'll say, though, just in all fairness, I think we as the customer have overplayed our hand in many situations.
Oh,
like
for
especially
sure.
Like during the pandemic and all those Karen videos, you know, where people just have a complete meltdown when things aren't going their way. I think the consumer for a long time took the sentiment of the customer is always right.
Literally.
And we definitely abused that and are facing some backlash now. But it's like it's time to everybody even out. If everyone just behaves properly and nicely, we won't have these issues.
What's interesting is you see a lot of younger, I mean, again, millennial, Gen Z, that, well, our generation's just not willing to do the, 40-hour grind just because that's how you get ahead. Well, then you're choosing not to get ahead. The world's not going to just be like, okay, well, here's what you want. You have to have a different way to do it so that you can work around it. You don't get just to say, I'm not going to do that, and then expect results.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
DGS on KMOX. Gonna do Throwback Thursday here, but first I have an observation. I was at dinner the other night for Maureen's birthday at a really nice restaurant, and there is a big family, and they had kids, 5, 6, 7 years old, and every one of them had a laptop size screen, and every one of them had big Beats headphones on, and it's just like, man, you got it so good. Like when I was little with my mom and dad at IHOP, I would get smacked because I was just trying to fight the boredom by making the syrup container sing, which was not going.
No.
And these kids are like in surround sound.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, what age?
Like 5, 6, 7.
Okay. Say, because at least, you know, now we used to have one option when you're at the restaurant. And that was, they would give you a menu that was a coloring page and like a little box of crayons, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's what you had to do until your food. Right. That was it. At least now you got your Beats headphones on, or maybe a little iPad or whatever. I mean, kids got it much better.
Yeah. I was a little salty because, like I said, it was a nice restaurant. It's a very dark restaurant, and the kids' headphones lit up. And it was just like, you could have just left them home.
Mm-hmm. The kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Like what's
boy,
the,
I sound old and curmudgeon.
Well, no,
it's
sound old.
And you don't sound old at all. It's like, what is the kid getting out of this experience? Because the kid doesn't. If the kid's got great big giant luminescent headphones on, he doesn't want to be there. He would rather be.
Well, I mean,
at
it's
home.
A little kid. They pretty much don't want to be anywhere.
Yeah,
they don't want to go out to those places. I get it to a degree, because if you had a 5-year-old and you don't have anybody that can readily babysit, are you just locked to your home? I mean, it's one way to make sure that kid's going to be quiet and not bother anybody else around. But I get what you're saying, though. Maybe just tape it over, or like, you know, when you see it, go, oh, let's cover that. Or maybe bring different headphones.
Yeah.
Don't get the shiny ones that day.
There you go. Throwback.
Throwback Thursday, August 21st, back in the day, such as 147 years ago in 1878, the American Bar Association was founded in Saratoga, New York, by 75 lawyers from 20 states.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder what they were doing before that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, I'm a lawyer. I've read a couple of books.
Yeah, Wild West. I really think it was that. I think that you could apprentice for a lawyer, and within a few months, I could go, you're good.
Well, then how did the original lawyer reach lawyer status?
Yeah, I guess he just said, like, I'm a lawyer.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, sounds good.
Just started fighting. It was Kevin. It was the equivalent of Kevin, just a guy who fought a lot.
Yep. A guy that likes to argue. Yeah, I'm John Adams.
Are you guys familiar with the poem Casey at the Bat?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, 138 years ago in 1887, Dan Casey struck out in the ninth inning of a game against the New York Giants. Sports columnist Ernest L. Thayer went home and began work on the poem.
Thanks, Ernest.
So back in the day, that's what sports writers did.
Yeah.
They wrote poems.
114 years ago in 1911, the Mona Lisa was stolen from the Louvre. It was recovered 2 years later.
I didn't know it was that long.
It must have been.
Wow, 2 years, yeah.
Been a rough couple of years.
That had to be a hell of a heist.
Yeah.
Why isn't there a movie about that?
Mona Lisa is so disappointing.
It's not the most exciting thing in the world.
It's like 11 by 17.
Like, if it weren't talked about,
you'd walk right past it.
You would just, okay, there's a lady.
I'm sure it's a work of genius.
I mean, if you understand art, and I don't, I'm sure it's supposed to be like ridiculously
on the picture.
It's supposed to be ridiculously detailed. And again, I'm not schooled enough to have that opinion.
You know what would make it better? And I don't have a degree in art, but just hear me out.
She had a gun.
Is if you, when you look at the Mona Lisa, if you stare and let your eyes go fuzzy, there's like an airplane in it.
Yeah, like a magic eye?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty sweet.
We need more magic eyes at the Louvre. I think they'd get a lot of people interested.
These days, the Mona Lisa would have an OnlyFans, am I right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
83 years ago in 1942, Bambi was released.
Never seen it.
It's not my favorite. I remember watching it as a kid and being like, why are we doing this to ourselves? This is very sad stuff.
Does it end well?
I don't remember.
I know it doesn't start well.
I kind of just remember the trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, no one remembers anything about that movie except for the trauma.
66 years ago in 1959, Hawaii was admitted as the 50th state in our union.
Cool.
And 38 years ago in 1987, Dirty Dancing was released, starring Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze.
I low-key like that movie.
Yeah, I hated it.
I kind of liked it. I've always loved the New York aesthetic of going away during the summers.
I get you, going up to the mountains.
Yeah, going to Pocono or whatever it is, Catskills. Yeah.
That's one of them.
Yeah.
35 years ago in 1990, Alice in Chains released their debut album, Facelift, featuring their smash hit, Man in the Box. Such
love it.
Alice in Chains is one of the all-time greats, man.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. The best. They're the best of the grunge bands.
Yep. Totally agree.
Followed by Soundgarden.
Wouldn't argue with you.
And then we can tie Nirvana and Pearl Jam for third.
Smart.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.